Hello, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 198 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always. With me this week is Kenny.
Hey, it's I didn't think I was going to be able to pull myself away from Mass Effect Andromeda, but here I am.
And I couldn't pull myself away from lazing around earlier this evening. I have to admit, I was taking it easy. So you're at least being more productive than me, Kenny.
Well, maybe just slightly. But not a whole lot more.
We are back this week. We took last week off. Unfortunately, I was a little bit under the weather. Had some problem with my jaw, which made talking for an extended period of time a little bit painful. So I had to keep quiet, much to the delight of everyone who knows me. I had to keep silent. But nevertheless, we are back this week to return to our duties talking about basketball video games. It's that time of the year, Kenny, when there's not a whole lot going on. Well, the NBA season, of course. We're kind of waiting for the playoffs to begin. And as for the games, yeah, not a lot of news just yet.
Yeah, not a whole bunch. I mean, there's a few things here or there for my team, but yeah, it's definitely the quiet part of the season.
Quiet part of the season. The preview season is still a few months away. Had a comment on an article the other day asking when NBA Live 18 news is coming, and indeed whether NBA Live 18 is going to be the name. Just to touch on that real quick, we assume so, because it's certainly not going to be Live 17 for the 17 season. That's almost done, obviously. And yes, and March is certainly a bit too early to getting any kind of news about the game. Probably around about the time of E3, June, July, that kind of time, we'll certainly cover it and have plenty to talk to then. And perhaps with two games this year, Kenny, we'll actually have we'll have things to talk about earlier in the piece and not having to speculate when it's actually going to get news this year, maybe, hopefully, possibly.
Hopefully, and, you know, with any luck, NBA Live 18 will make a really competitive product. And, you know, I've been having a look at the Frostbite engine with Mass Effect Andromeda, and graphics on that game are beautiful, no matter what people say about, you know, the animations and the facial expressions and whatnot. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of potential there.
Sounds familiar, the graphical gripes and EA games, I guess. But, yeah, we don't know anything yet. And, of course, the rumor is that it's going to be in the Frostbite engine. So we shall see. We'll know that in a few months. We'll cover it when we get to it. For the meantime, I guess we just have NBA 2K17, or older games if you're playing them. But us personally, we've been playing NBA 2K17 ourselves, and thought we'd tip things off this week by talking a little bit about the game. Obviously, we've said a lot of things over the past, how many months has it been now? 5 months that it's been out? October, November, December, January, February, March. 6 months, 5 or 6 months that the game has been out, and plenty of time to formulate opinions on the game, and patches have come through that have changed this or that and made this better and this worse. But we thought we'd touch on a couple of things, especially as we compile feedback for the developers and push through our final wish list items. And we thought we'd talk about our favorite thing about NBA 2K17 right now and our least favorite thing, if we can identify perhaps the main things that are really standing out for us at the moment. And I think I've got my items sorted out. Kenny, what comes to mind for you for your favorite or least favorite thing, whichever you want to start off with?
Well, I'll start with the positive first. I think my favorite thing at the moment is probably somewhere between, I guess, the My League experience I'm having right now with the Seattle Sonics, or just my team in general. Like, when they push through content for my team, whether it's the Moments Challenges or the Weekly Challenges, I get a lot of enjoyment out of those because they allow me to afford to buy a whole bunch of new cards, and it's really interesting being able to test new players and see what players work for your teams and whatnot. And also a great nostalgia trip. I never thought I would say this, but Keith Van Horn is working really well for me and my team at the moment.
Wow, the official currency of the NBA for a few seasons there, Keith Van Horn, to put it as cruelly as possible. Yeah, that's and the cover player of, I think, NBA Jam 99 or 2000, one of the ones. Yes, at one point Keith Van Horn was a future star in the league. But yeah, that's interesting that he's stepping it up. And I guess that's kind of the way it is sometimes in my team, that these unexpected players and these cards can prove to be useful.
Yeah, I think it's because the Keith Van Horn card I have is a ruby, and it's from the college, I can't remember the exact name, but it's like College Stars. So you collect
that's the one that's out, yeah.
You collect, like, you collect like a bunch of college stars. Like, I think it's him. I think one of them might be Tyler Hansbrough as well. Like, cause he was like quite a star in college. And when you complete that collection, you get, I think it's a diamond Christian Leitner. So, you know, it's a very, you know, not a whole lot of players. I mean, I guess there are a few players in that collection that did make it in the NBA and made it quite well, but there are a few players that, you know, may have just been slight role players in the league or, you know, maybe slightly better than that. And you forget sometimes that they were really good in college.
Yeah, well, we can't all be LaVar Ball. But but absolutely, you know, Leitner, is, as much as people joke about him on the Dream Team, and I'm guilty of that as myself, but he was a fine player for Duke back in the day.
Yeah, and Tyler Hansbrough, I think he still has a bunch of records for North Carolina. So is that the team he played for, North Carolina?
I want to say so, yeah.
Pretty sure he was a Tar Heel.
Adam Morrison for Gonzaga? You know, who's
I don't think they had Morrison in that collection, though, which was unfortunate.
Because he was a two-time player of the year, or he certainly was a distinguished player and led the league, led the nation in scoring, I think, or the conference in scoring at one point. I know he was, you know, came into the league with a lot of hype, and he was tapped by EA Sports to be an NBA Live 07. You know, he was in the, you know, the mustache, My Mustache Speaks to Me commercial. One of my favorite my favorite commercials.
Was a good commercial. Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
But Campus Legends, Campus Pack, something like that, that's going at the moment.
Yeah. I think Campus Legends was the official title for it, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it's those gems of the game make my team really interesting. And as I said before we recorded, I also picked up Chris Webber as well. And, you know, he was one of my favorite players, like, back in the day when he was playing for... Actually, I was pretty much a fan of him pretty much from day one when he was with the Warriors. So, it was really cool. A nice trip down memory lane to get a Ruby Chris Webber from the Washington Bullets.
See, I didn't think the Warriors existed before the Splash Brothers got there. But
But I mean, yeah.
And you said that was a Bullets... Or Bullets Wizards, Webber, wasn't it? Or was it the King?
Yeah, Bullets, Washington Bullets, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I remember those days and those jerseys certainly takes me back. But yeah, so that's great that you've got that mode at the moment, and it's obviously robust. I still want to get into it. I did the pack opening, I've still got to do the video, put together the video, because I want to get the footage of the cards, the real cards that I want to do the comparison of. But I've got a fairly decent team that I've put together. I've done a couple of the preliminary challenges, but I do need to get into the weekly challenges. It does look like they're pushing through a lot of new content, and certainly to their credit, because that is something that if you look at what EA did with NBA Live 16, they stopped pushing through the Ultimate Team content around about March this time last year. So a mode like that, you absolutely need to keep pushing through that new content to keep it relevant, and especially because I guess you've got a very big collection right now. So once you get to a certain point, I guess you can shoot for the Kobe at the end, the all-time great collector level. But beyond that, you also need something to keep yourself occupied with the games and play. So, no, that's definitely, you can see what they've done with that mode. Have you played much of it online?
Not so much. I mean, there were times when I just missed out on a matchup on Pro-Am because I was, like, late or whatever, and I would play my team Blacktop, but... I don't really do that as much these days because I just don't find online play very fun. Mm. At least NBA 2K anyway. Like, there are other games where I like it, such as Disc Jam and Rocket League and stuff like that. But I don't know. I find the 2K community to be a bit off-putting sometimes.
I've had the same with Live as well. The quitters, the people who disconnect just as they're about to lose, it's very frustrating. We will come back to online, I know, over the course of this show with some of the topics we've got lined up on the docket this week. See, with favorite, I mean, for a while, Pro-Am was, I was really enjoying Pro-Am. And again, I guess we'll go into more detail about that shortly as well. Oddly, you know, as much as I wanted to get into my league this year and still want to do that along with my team, I guess my career, I've really fallen back in love with it. You know, I thought the story this year, because I have finished the first season now, gone through to the second. Thought I was able to set some records and I've upped the difficulty and now really enjoying that. It was so refreshing to have a story that added a bit of flavor content in the background without really taking over the whole experience for that first year. I think they've found a really good balance with it. There's more that they need to do, I think, as far as being able to have branching storylines and or maybe even starting a career and foregoing the story completely, like an old, like bringing back the creating a legend mode and having a separate story mode and career mode. That would be fantastic. Much like they've done with My League and My GM, you know, having the two separate approaches to the franchise mode, where you've got the RPG-driven My GM and then you've got the sandbox of My League. You know, I think they need to do something similar, have a similar option with the career mode as well. And I've said this many times before, obviously. But having said that, I have really enjoyed my career this year. So that's probably my favorite thing as far as modes. I mean, if we're talking about gameplay, I do like the responsiveness. I've gone back and played a couple of older games for features recently and have found, there have been some pleasing gameplay improvements, but I've had to pick the one favorite thing that's really perhaps brought me the most enjoyment, I guess, over the past 6 months. It probably, consistently, would probably be my career, I would have to say. And that's really going against my roots as a franchise gamer, which I hate to say it, and knowing all the stuff. I have started a couple of my leagues and wanted to get into them. And still, you know, there's still months until new games come out. So there's still time, obviously. I also wanted to finish my career game before I really got into League. Now that I've got through the second season, I feel I can relax a bit and maybe get into some My League. Because, as you know from doing your My League, which everyone can check out in the story section, of course, just so many options in that mode that you can set up this experience of something that we've really wanted for years. Like, going, you know, you and I go back a long way with the franchise modes, you know.
Yep.
And we have had fun with 06 and Live 10, of course. You had the next level that went all those seasons. But all the options that are in My League these days, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's such a robust mode. And, they did a lot with it this season by, like, bringing in the expansion. Like, that was just amazing, just being able to do that. And I kind of wanted to bring back a point that I listened to, I think on previous podcasts, one of the ones I wasn't on, so, you know, one of the good ones, but...
you flatter us, sir.
Did you and Ben end up doing the contrasting My Leagues where you started with the Bulls where they are now and the Heat where they are now?
I have this...
There's a competition there.
I have the save ready to go. I haven't actually been able to... I haven't gotten around to playing any of the games yet, and I don't think Ben has either over the past week. Ben should be back next week, we're guessing. He's alive and well. Shout out to Ben. not able to join us this evening for the record. But, yeah, I haven't actually done it yet, so we haven't got that going. But, I really kind of like that idea, so hopefully we can still do it, because that was... I might have to start it again. It might be even more of a... In fact, it might even be better now, because the Bulls and Heat are very close in the standings right now. So it would be very interesting for us to do it starting today or tomorrow. Because, yeah, again, I think there's about a game separating them in the standings. So, yeah, that would be still fun to do, I reckon.
Because you know what I would do? I would, if I were a Bulls fan, and, you know, back in the 90s I kind of was, because, you know, Michael Jordan and whatnot.
Of course.
But if I was today, I would probably start, do a my career, not my career, my league or whatever, do that start today option and play out like that Lakers scenario where they just basically do this massive overhaul and you're the main man and you're the one that drives the ship. And you can start by, you know, doing all the drafts in the next season and all the, like, off-season signings. Like, I think that would be fun.
That's what I'm thinking, because, again, it's pretty late in the year to be starting from scratch and feeling really enthused about it. You know, it's kind of intimidating to start there in the October in the schedule and think, oh, I've got to get through 82 games, you know, because I do like to play as many as possible. But, you know, the Bulls are 34 and 38 as of this recording, the Heat 35 and 36, so game and a half back in the standings. So if Ben and I were to do it, that would be an interesting competition. And, of course, if I start today, the Bulls are just out of the playoffs. Could I turn it around? So
that would be fun.
I think I'm going to have to give it a go before the season's over and I can actually have a start today game, an NBA Today My League game. So, no, I'll definitely give that a shot, I think, because it's, like you say, an interesting challenge. Obviously, the trade deadline has passed, but you can start in the off season and get rid of Hoiberg, probably, because that's probably one of the first moves I'll make. But
yeah, well, that's definitely one thing you can do. You could also just kind of let the season go into free fall and sim it to the next off season, get right into that straight away, because that's honestly my favorite part of the season, making personnel changes, changes to the roster and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of options there.
And, of course, there's also the option to start in the off season of the 2016 off season, so I could choose not to sign Rondo, for example, or make a play for someone else. I mean, there's... And again, you do start in the offseason, there's a lot of stuff you can do. Again, it is, like you say, such a deep, robust mode.
And if Ben did that, he could choose to re-sign D. Wade, but I don't know how I'd feel about that, because maybe he wouldn't sign Deion Waiters, and, you know, that'd make me sad, honestly.
Great Deion Waiters, yeah. Playing pretty well for the Heat, yeah.
Because, like, in all seriousness, Deion Waiters had my favorite moment of the season so far, when he hit that game-winning three against the Warriors. Just like his whole cross arm pose as well. I thought that was amazing.
I mean, take your victories when you can get them, and the Heat are right there in the playoffs right now. So hey, he's and Wade has just been ruled out for the Bulls as well. So it's a tough finish for them in real life, but maybe it can change their fortunes in the game. And of course, that's really what the franchise modes are all about, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you do it better than the real GMs? You know, prove it, I guess. So, I mean, that's I guess, our favorite things about the game at the moment. I've got a feeling we might line up, or certainly I'm going to be in strong agreement with your least favorite, as we were talking before we started recording. The one thing, I'll very quickly throw out mine first, because yours might lead into a longer discussion. In fact, I know it will, because it's part of our week in basketball gaming. But my least favorite is probably the amount... it sounds like a lot of things I'm trying to encompass in once. But basically the legacy issues, like the short list of legacy issues. And if I had to sum it up as one thing, it's probably the canned moments that are still there. The cheap steals, the getting stuck in animations, the running in mud, that kind of thing. The stuff that has been going on for four or five games now and hasn't seemed to have improved that much, even with the new Eco-Motion engine. I mean, the improvement has definitely been there, as I said earlier, but not quite enough. I guess... still experiencing the problems that frustrated me 3, 4, 5 years ago, still dealing with them now. I think that's my least favorite aspect of 2K17, and that's something that has... The more you play games, I mean, when you first get games, a new basketball game each year, you know, you're impressed by the improvements, but as you play them a little bit more, all those issues start rearing their heads again, and you're like, oh, that's a shame, because that's really been bugging me for a few years. So I think it is those canned moments, and if I can sneak a second one in there, probably the AI lapses, especially pick and roll defense is really probably in fact, if I had to pick one gameplay issue that really bugs me from, here I am moving, keep on moving to new things, my one least favorite thing, but one gameplay issue that perhaps bothers me across all modes is that the CPU is terrible at defending pick and roll, and with switching and everything, and that's probably, for a game that prides itself in realistic gameplay, that is one area where it really kind of dropped the ball this year, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it is really hard to defend out of those pick and roll situations because of the way that the AI defends, and you know, I usually pride myself on being a good defender, and it's just frustrating not being able to defend those as well as I would be able to. Like, I mean, if I could control both of those players. So yeah, it's a bit of a pain. And I think to go back to like the can animations, I think they're at their worst when it comes to foul calls. Particularly, and I know I'm a culprit of this one, but actually it is two. the charge cheese where you can take a charge of the player on the transition. Against the player on the transition, I think that's really bad. And I only started doing that because people were doing that to me. And the baseline drive cheese as well. I think that needs to be addressed, even though that's kind of my bread and butter. But, you know, I wouldn't mind if it was fixed. If it was fixed, I would just adapt, find a new way to score. That would be okay.
Well, but I guess it's going to tie into what we're going to get into momentarily, but... It is something, you know, so you say you have to do it because others are doing it. When you play online, you kind of have to adapt to those strategies, even if they're cheesy and reprehensible in the context of online basketball gaming. You kind of have to resort to it, otherwise you are at such a disadvantage, and that is unfortunate but true.
Yeah, And I guess it's similar to like regular NBA in a way. Like you have to adapt as different teams run different plays and whatnot, and you know, do different things across the years. Like basketball has changed so much since the 90s, like just in the way it's played and whatnot. So I guess it is realistic in that sense. But there was one other point I wanted to pick up as far as like AI defense is concerned. Mm-hmm. One thing that really annoys me is when the AI bails out the opposition with reach-in calls. And that's not just an online thing. It happens in my league all the time. Yep. And it's just like, man, you know, I was defending the possession really well and I get slightly beat like by the person. Like maybe they get past me on the drive or something and the AI would just come in, try and slap his hand. It's like, why? Like, can't I just let him have the 2 points? Like, yes. I'd rather be bad on a defensive play than to give away like a really cheap foul. Like, it's so annoying.
I mean, there are times when you say, okay, you know, you play the Matador defense, give up the 2 points, and you don't want to foul and give up the easy 3-point play. You know, there are times sometimes where you pick your poison, and you see it in the real NBA where, okay, I'm beat, you know, get the score, get the bucket, then, you know, make a quick score, quick reply at the other end. Absolutely. But with the pick and roll defense, you know, as you noted, you can't control both plays. So you've really got to pick your poison as far as it doesn't matter whether you want to, you know, switch. It doesn't matter how you play it, basically, because the CPU teammate just doesn't do the right thing with the switch or anything. So it doesn't matter which way you go. Someone is going to get left open because the CPU is not going to do their job. And if you're in a player lock mode, my career, you're completely screwed because you can't even switch control to make the switch on defense. So, you know, you're going to get the defensive breakdown one way or the other because you just can't do the job of the CPU and yourself as well. So it is frustrating to have those AI lapses, and I was hoping that they'd be able to address them in some of the patches, but definitely for 2K18. No, but yeah, I guess that's my least favorite. Anything else in the defense, or would you like to share what I believe? I think I know what your least favorite is going to be because we've discussed it at length. But
well, I think at the moment my least favorite thing in general is just online play. You know, anybody listening, I'm pretty sure that you saw me going there like as soon as we started this discussion, but
yep.
It continues to be an issue. As long as there are people playing 2K, online's probably going to be an issue. And I think it's, you know, a lot of those cheesy plays, a lot of the mechanics as well, like when they do the quick step back dribble into the three, that really annoys me. And just a bunch of, I guess, legacy issues as well within that, and a lot of exploits. So yeah, that's online play. Let's just say online play.
it's gotten to the point, and I guess, you know, having said that, we could probably transition into, at the same time, our week in basketball gaming.
Puts it down! What a play!
Oh, that's a sweet finish right there.
But, and I'm going to write an article about it myself and obviously talk about it now as well, but I'm finding myself in the same, a very similar spot as far as online play goes. I mean, there was a time when you, Ben, and I were getting on 3 or 4 times a week to play 2K Pro-Am. Yeah. Even when we weren't having some rough sessions, you know, and as if you go back and listen to older podcasts, you can see how much we were talking about it and saying, oh, you know, we've had a bit of a struggle, but we're still having fun with it. On you know, the social aspect and, you know, when things are going well, it's all fun. But we just had some really depressing, is depressing the right word here to use for the sessions? We certainly were bummed out after some of the sessions. In recent, probably over the last month, 6 weeks, something like that. It's really sort of gone downhill, our whole experience with the online. And I had talked about, Ben and I discussed it, on, I think maybe on the last show or the show before, it was one that you missed. But you reckon it's sort of gotten to the point, issues with the game itself aside, that we've kind of achieved what we set out to do? I mean, we've played 400 games, roughly, of Pro-Am. We've sort of had our big numbers. You had your 64-point game. I've had the 2020 game. And, you know, I got to my averaging a double-double, and everyone sort of had nights where they put up numbers, and we got to elite briefly. and we're able to actually put in our branding and everything, has it kind of jumped the shark for us, do you think? I mean, the issues are issues, obviously, but if nothing else, do you think we're just completely burned out at this point, having done everything we set out to do, sort of?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the answer to that is, because I think for me, like, I was saying to myself, look, I am coming out of these sessions really frustrated. I'm not really enjoying the game that much. And so the thing for me was, I just wanted to give it a rest and see whether I was enjoying the game offline. And the thing was, I was enjoying the game immensely offline. So, yeah. And also, when it comes to, like, having one team for one player, it kind of takes away a lot from the mode as well, because I remember back in 2K16, each of us owned a team.
Yep.
And we kind of took turns at, like, being the GM and, you know, hosting the games and whatnot. And it kind of opened up the experience for a bunch of other people in the community as well. And I think there's less of a community aspect in this year's Pro-Am, because they can't just randomly join the team. They have to sign through the free agency, and there's only 10 spots. And I think we had more than 10 players last season. Like, yeah, the usual five, and then, like, the other three, like, guys that are on our team now. And then we had people like Q and Mike joined us in one of the games, MP3.
Yep.
Think even Axel joined us in one of the games as well. Yes. And one of Q's friends did as well. So, yeah, we had, like, a full NBA roster, like, without having to commit anybody to, like, that kind of contract system that they've got now. So I think that's kind of been a double-edged sword. It does allow people to track stats and whatnot. And for another reason, I think that's a double-edged sword as well. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it was better in 2K16 because you could just have, like, more impromptu sessions with more people. And it was fun, like, it was fun having sessions with our American friends like John and Eric and stuff like that. And, you know, we were able to do it more readily.
Yeah. Because
now it's, yeah, it's...
I hadn't really thought of that. Because, I mean, the squad options do have their benefits. It's, you know, not just the esports. Obviously, esports being a big thing now. And that's why it's obviously become a thing. I would have to imagine that that's why they're having such an emphasis on squads and being a set squad and everything. But yeah, so that casual aspect and being able to create a few different teams, and we've seen some familiar names on there. Obviously, they've created new teams because they've wanted to get to Elite and they've just had records that didn't do it. I guess maybe we should have done that earlier on too, if we thought about it. But yeah, I mean, is that another situation where, like with the My Career situation, where they need to do a better job catering to both audiences? People who do want to play a bit more casually, but not as casually as Walk-On, because, man, that's got its own issues. Walk-On. But between the people who want to be ultra-competitive and go for esports tournaments, you know, we're sort of in the middle of that casual Walk-On and hardcore esports crowd with it. And, of course, we come up against other elite teams, especially post-patch. And I think that's the other thing as well, is that we're facing off against a lot of teams who are either, because they're really good at online, you know, competitive online gaming, or they've got really good builds, they are very tough for us to contend with the team that we've constructed. So that's led to some very frustrating sessions. And once again, a double-edged sword there is that we get the games, but we're not perhaps in a division that's to our speed. And that, I think, is accelerated burnout, perhaps, on the whole experience, I should say.
Yeah, I think that's all led up to it as well. I don't know. I think for me, the mode was just getting... It was probably as much fun as it's always been, like, when we were losing. Because, I mean, we talk about having good experiences and stuff, but we also had a lot of really terrible experiences online as well. So
absolutely.
It hasn't been, like, all roses until, like, the last month. We have had, like, sessions where we've just come out incredibly frustrated. And I think just for me personally, I was just like, you know, what's the point of playing this mode if I'm just going to be angrier than I was when I started? Like, it's just not worth it.
I agree. You know, it's insane to force yourself to try and enjoy something that you're not, or to do something that you're clearly not enjoying. You know, it's like the people who continue to watch television shows they absolutely hate. You know, maybe it's time to stop watching. And I mean, I know hate watching is a whole thing, with video games is a little bit different. But I mean, probably the last really great experience we had was Park After Dark number 3.
Yeah, well, it's really strange to say, but yeah, our last great experience was in the park.
And I've had a couple of decent games with Ben. We actually ended up winning a game. We lost one 22-0 in the 2-on-2, because a 2-on-2 is make it, take it. So yeah, if you have a bad matchup, they're just going to keep scoring on you, and you're never going to get a chance to get the ball, basically. And that was what happened. Then we actually beat someone 22-0 with, oh, fantastic. And that was the last good win of the night. So, and then we had one, we got on there with ZZ and had some decent runs, but just could not get a win. You know, we got some good starts and just could not get a win at all. And it was frustrating. So yeah, the most recent positive experiences I've had online have actually been Park, which is funny because it's traditionally not been my mode of choice for online.
But no.
But yeah, you know, it's something. You know, I was talking to X on Twitter about it, and I know he's keen to have a couple more sessions. You know, I'll probably give it one more go, but I think it's getting to the point where I think I am kind of done with online, and combination of the frustration, the issues, and the burnout, I think. And also feeling like, you know, we gave it a pretty good run, like 400 games of Prime. I think that's more than we did last year, easily.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
So that's what, how many seasons worth of games is that?
I'm a creative writing major, not a math major, so I'm not going to do that one.
Maths is not my strong suit, but I do have a calculator here. That's almost 5 NBA seasons worth of games, you know, in the space of 6 months. So
yeah, that's solid.
That's a lot of hours into it, and again, record has not been fantastic, so there's been some rough weeks there, here and there. So I guess it is what it is, but the fortunate thing with 2K17, while we do have a criticisms, is that there are these other modes, single-player modes, that are robust and deep and offering this experience. Like, you know, obviously you've got my team, and which you've been enjoying, and my league. And yeah, I mean, I guess I could, on the more positive side of things, you know, you have been doing those. You have been having some good experiences in those as of late.
Yeah, I think just in general, those have been more fun because I haven't been associating 2K Pro-Am with them.
Mm.
So it's like I no longer have like this thing where, yeah, I have fun in my team in my league, but my God, Pro-Am just hasn't been very fun lately. So that kind of makes 2K17 not as good in my book. Whereas now I've kind of eliminated the Pro-Am. It's like, okay, so it's actually a fun game again. Like, there are no exceptions to me saying that.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually fun. Yeah. And, like, lately in my team, I eclipsed the 900 card mark. So I was able to have, like, I think the reward for that is 30,000 MT. And I went on a bit of a shopping spree for cards when that happened. So that was fun.
Was that when you got C-Web?
That's when I got both C-Web and Keith Van Horn.
That's
so,
right, yes.
I got a few other cards worth, I just can't think of them right now. I was going to say I've got a few other noteworthy cards, but yeah.
Well, you got over 900, so that's
yeah,
quite a lot in the collection.
It's hard to keep track of.
Is it 1,500? Is that the all-time, or is it 1,000 is the all-time, the Kobe card?
No, 1,000 is, because 1,000 is the next mark I have to get, and 1,000 is, I think, Michael Ray Richardson. So I think it might be 1,700 or something like that, 1,800 maybe.
It is very cool that players like that are getting represented. You know, that's,
yeah.
Like, I won't pretend to be overly familiar with Michael Ray Richardson, but obviously, you know that he was a pretty damn good player in the early 80s, and then career derailed by the drug problems and the suspension and everything, and I think that I've never seen the actual documentary, but there was one. I think Chris Rock might have helped produce it back in the day. Whatever Happened to Michael Ray? And I need to look it up because I do enjoy those basketball documentaries, obviously. And but yeah, anyway, it is great to see him. And I know there's a Len Bias card in Ultimate Team. I don't know if that's also in 2K. In my
yeah, I don't think they've done that yet.
But there was a Bias card in 15 or possibly 16 as well in Live Ultimate Team. So again, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. But yeah, I'm racking my brain trying to think of these other cards that I got, but I just, I can't think of any. I don't know what's going on. I think I got another sharpshooter, but I can't think of who it was. No, it wasn't Chandler Parsons because I got him beforehand, but I'm sure it'll come to me after we stop recording.
Always the way.
Yeah.
News break, so we remember what we were going to say on the show. So with your My League, I obviously don't want to draw attention away from the thread because you've got the great story thread going again this year, and check that out in the story section, everyone. But how many sort of games do you play at a time? Do you have a marathon session of the games, do you find, or...?
I can usually get in about two or three a night because I play 9-minute quarters, which sounds like a lot, but when you're actually enjoying yourself, it doesn't feel like that much. So it's, I mean, I'm having a lot of fun with my lineups at the moment because everything's still pretty new. I think once I get about halfway into the season, I might start to get bored of it, but at the moment I'm playing every game, having a lot of fun, trying out new rotations, getting a lot of success with both Tony Snell and Brandon Rush in my bench rotation, so that's been fun. Like, Brandon Rush is an absolute gun from three-point range. I think I'm shooting almost 50% with him at the moment.
Kind of a forgotten player in real life, I guess, in some respects.
Yeah. He's
with the Timberwolves at the moment, or...?
I think he's with the Timberwolves, yeah. But he's... Yeah, a lot of people forget about him, but he's a career 40% shooter from beyond the arc. So, you know,
yeah,
that's more than formidable.
And it's, I mean, I can certainly relate. When you're really into a mode, whether it's my career or my league or Dynasty back in the day, you know, you just sort of have those sessions when you do have the time, and it gets more difficult the older you get and other responsibilities come along. But if you do have the evening to yourself to play video games, you know, much the same way as I might say, oh, one more quest in Fallout, or, you know, one more level of or whatever, you know, you can end up playing 2-3 games in a session and, you know, just really getting engrossed. And that's, you know, that's when you're really enjoying a basketball game, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's part of why NBA Live 18 needs to expand on its Dynasty mode, so it can have more nights like that and more experiences associated with it.
Because, you know, it even says, I think, on a lot of the boxes, you know, experience may change online. And I know the online experience is a big... it is such a big part of gaming these days and can't be neglected, obviously. But you need to have those robust single-player modes as well so that there's something for everyone and there's a change of pace. You know, you can't have... I mean, gameplay is important, don't get me wrong, but if without modes... gameplay... makes the game fun to play. Great gameplay makes the game fun to play, obviously. The modes add longevity, and you need that. You know, you've got 12 months until the next game comes out. You've got to have some reason. It can't just be a bunch of random online games. I guess some people enjoy that, but...
Yeah.
The modes, yeah, absolutely. And hopefully Live 18 does, you know. I don't think Dynasty can catch up to My League in a year. That's just... But it needs to, needs to take steps towards that. And I know people say, oh... games have got to be different. Live can still do things in its own way, but when it comes to putting together a franchise mode, there are some core elements that definitely need to be done these days, and 2K is doing them, and Live absolutely need, you know, because I mean, you look how many years you put into or played through in NBA Live 10, which is a fine game with a pretty robust Dynasty mode for its time.
Yeah,
but I imagine what you could do, again, with anything like My League in line.
Yeah, I think as far as making the two games different, I think you could make them different with other modes. Like, you have, what is it, Rising Star mode in NBA Live 16?
Is that what it's called? Is the career mode Rising Star, yeah.
Yeah, so you have Rising Star, and, like, you could have it to be similar to what my... I was going to say my player, going back a few years, but what my career is now. But one of the selling points could be, look, we don't have a story. Yeah. And that could be a selling point. Like, you don't have to go through cutscenes. It's just game. It's just all the good stuff. Yeah.
You tell no the story. You tell the story with what you do on the virtual hardwood, so to speak.
And, like, if you do add a story element, make it a very minimal one. Mm. Like, make it so that it is still you. You're not like this character who has this dropkick friend. Or if you want to have a dropkick friend, fine, you can have a dropkick friend, yeah. But it is not forced upon you.
Yes.
You also don't have this agent that you absolutely detest, or, you know, a sister that drives you crazy or anything like that. I mean, you can have them.
Or an obnoxious nickname.
I will admit that I do like Michael B. Jordan, so I have liked that aspect of...
He's good, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, Orange Juice, not my favorite.
No,
but
I'm used to it. I like the mechanics, you know, certainly like the mechanics of it. But no, they definitely need to do something there, because seeing just how much is in my league and how much I want to get into it, and seeing how much fun you've had with it, following along with your story and talking to you, on the podcast and when we've, been chatting at other times. Yeah, we've already said it so many times in this episode, but it's just so deep and robust. There are things that can be improved with as far as... I think across a lot of modes, it seems that some players are changing teams maybe a little too frequently, but then again, we're just coming off a huge off-season in real life where a lot of big names changed teams. Kevin Durant, Dwight Howard named us too, changed. So, I mean, it's hard to say what's realistic once you get past that first year in any franchise mode.
And, you know, with my league, in its second season... Not many star players moved from their like main team. Like Giannis signed back with the Bucks. The Warriors got back both Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, even though Andre Iguodala went to the Phoenix Suns. But like, I found that all those big name players were going back to their old teams, and it was really weird because I don't know whether this is going to happen in real life, but it seems like it was either the rich were getting richer or other role players were just signing to minimum contracts. Mm. And like every team was just like trying to front load their squads and then like round it all out with minimum contracts. Like that 1 year for $1.01 million contract, it was everywhere in the off season. Like, and it kind of annoyed me because I was like, damn it, I could have signed like Tony Snell or somebody to that same contract instead of paying them $3 million because I was being generous. I gave Dion Waiters a contract for $9 million for one season with a team option for like pretty much the same amount of money. I was like, man, I could have ripped him off a little more because it felt like a lot of other players in the league were getting ripped off.
Reminds me of Live 2004, which had the bug where a lot of players would get unsigned, then you could just sign all the top rated free agents for the minimum. You just have this amazingly stacked team. They fixed that for 2005, thankfully. I remember having to basically fix teams around the league after the first year. Like, you'd have to say, okay, well, Kobe, you can't sit in the free agent pool for 2 years because he will if someone doesn't sign him. So, like, signing him and trading him back to the Lakers and everything like that. So, fortunately, of course, you got more stuff again in my league these days where you can customize the league a bit with play commissioner, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, again, to say what's realistic because we've just had all that movement. I guess the big thing is going to be actually players taking really huge, outrageous contracts. I mean, we saw that last season as well with Mike Conley getting the amazingly huge deal, and talking about DeMarcus Cousins getting a $200 million deal possibly at the end of this season. Like, who knows what now that he's been traded to the Pelicans? But
and Millsap's potentially leaving $50 million on the table if he chooses to leave Atlanta. So.
Well, see, now he did. In my career, he did. He's gone to the Brooklyn Nets of all places, actually.
Yeah, he went to Phoenix in my league, so yeah, he moved.
Because now I've just gotten into that second year of my career. Did I say my league before? I probably meant to say my career. So I also noticed Iguodala went to the Magic. That was unexpected, but there he is in Orlando coming off the bench. So... I had a marathon session to finish my career because I wanted to. I was kind of getting a bit burned out, and I've said that in a previous show as well. Like I find that sort of once you get to right about the 60 game mark in either the franchise mode or the career mode, you're ready for the playoffs. And so I was kind of forcing myself through the last few months, really hammering it through, not hating it. You know, I was still enjoying the experience overall, but kind of like, oh, you know, I do want to get to the playoffs and. obviously was had the plans for the second season, so I wanted to do that as well. And I did end up simming to the end of a few games. And I did notice that when you ask out of the game, you actually don't ask out. It sims you through to the end.
Yeah, I think they need to fix that. I would rather be benched than have my statistics inflated even more.
Yeah, that's why I was like, hang on. Because I got at the end of the game and an accolade popped up, you know, have 25 and 15. And I asked out of the game when I think I had about 25 and 13 or something. You know, I'm like, I didn't get 15 assists. I didn't get this much. Oh, okay. So you actually simulated minutes. Fair enough. I see why they're doing it. But yeah, I agree. I'd rather just ask out at that point. So I did that to get through to the end of the season. I did play the whole playoffs without doing that. And set some records. I rewrote the record books of scoring and 3 points and steals for both the regular season and playoffs. And that was all fun, you know, just grinding for the last few badges and everything. That's the other thing, of course. I've got the Hall of Fame Lob City Passer badge now. So I've got all these badges and we're sick of Pro-Am. So now that I've got all the badges. So I got through the playoffs, finished 77-5 in the regular season. And so take that, Warriors. And with the Nuggets, of course, and swept my way through the playoffs and ended up facing the Bulls in the finals. Not going to happen in real life, I can tell you that much. And swept them in the finals, of course, and won. They were 47-35, so 30 wins difference in the finals when it came down to it. Got the MVP, got through the offseason. Now, as I said in previous shows, I wanted to go to the Bulls, so I'm going to. Here I am on the verge of pulling like a reverse Durant, going to the team that I've beaten for the championship. And as it got to that point in the off season and started, you got to select the three teams to. And you stayed in Chicago, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I think I'm the only one out of us that was stayed loyal after the first season.
Because I've always stayed loyal in previous games when I've gone through the first season in my career, but I thought no, I'll change it. I've never played for the Bulls, so I'll try. And as I got to it, it has had this really weirdly, coolly weird or weirdly cool, I don't know how you'd put it, moment of role-playing where I started to get cold feet about leaving the Nuggets because, you know, I don't dislike the Nuggets. I've actually got kind of an affinity for them, having played a couple of career, you know, micro games across different games for them. And certainly, you know, they're not one of my least favorite teams or anything, and I've enjoyed some of their, you know, watching with some of their players over the years. And in the terms of basketball video games, again, yeah, sort of an affinity for them. So I was like, oh, do I really want to leave, or do I want to build something special and try and build a dynasty here? And like, I don't know. You know, I said I'd leave for the Bulls, and you know, I want to try something different. So I did. I did end up going, you know, put the Bulls as my first choice, and they didn't offer the most money, but I'm like, I don't really need a lot of VC at the moment, so not hurting for that. So I will go for the Bulls, but I sort of had this twinge of regret. I did write about this in Monday Tip Off this week, but it was kind of a cool moment of it, and I thought, I wonder if, like, you know, when LeBron James did have his decision back in 2010, and in this sort of that hesitation before he said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Like, he sort of wondered what was going through his mind at the time. Like, did he, leading up to that, making that big choice, that big decision and the announcement, I sort of wonder if he sort of felt that, because I actually sort of, in my role-playing, felt it as well. It was kind of a funny, cool moment, I guess. But then, you know, you sign on the dotted line, so to speak, and no regrets, and I've played a few games with the Bulls. I've upped the difficulty level, and it's definitely more challenging now. I'm still getting pretty good numbers. It's not. I haven't bumped it up to Hall of Fame because I've heard that's just ridiculous. With some of the issues, just do you play in Hall of Fame or is it Superstar?
I play in Superstar.
Superstar, yeah,
yeah.
So hats off to anyone who plays in Hall of Fame because, as I understand it, it's not even close to being fair. But I did ratchet it up, and yeah, it's definitely, you're not winning as easily, but the team's pretty good, and I'm with Justice Young there. It kind of gets a bit cheesy at times. Haven't sort of come close, been able to pull away towards the end of every game so far, but haven't really played a very, you know, top opponent as yet. And it's definitely harder. You can feel it, and I feel more of an accomplishment when I get you know, an assist or make the 3-pointer or everything, because it was definitely cheesy before. So yeah, it's in retrospect, I probably should have done it last season, but I just wanted to have that first season where I'm just going nuts on the league and unlocking badges. And hey, you know, it's my enjoyment. I'm not trying to pretend I'm the best basketball gamer of all time here.
And in saying that, the badge system, the way it works, it doesn't encourage players to set the difficulty up. It encourages them to put it down even lower. So, yeah, there's no incentive to want to play like on a harder mode except for the BC incentive. And honestly, the difference isn't that large. So.
No, it's like the multiplayer. It's nice to have, but yes, I'm enjoying playing for the Bulls. I think I made the right call at the end. You know, it was a great first year with the Nuggets, but... Eh, try something different, you know, and it's a video game at the end of the day, you know, it's not a life-shattering life choice to make this decision in the second year of my career in NBA 2K17. But, no, I thought it was kind of funny that I had that moment of regret and cold feet about making this decision that ultimately doesn't affect me as soon as I turn off the console, you know, but it was, yeah, just sort of like a bit of a role-playing moment that's the kind of storytelling that I like. With the video games, and I'm guessing that you do too, with all the great work you've done with your story threads, to tell that story yourself. I think, and maybe it's just because you and I both like creative writing, maybe we're kind of biased in that respect. But being able to create that experience, you know, they talk about be the story. That hashtag, you know, we like to do that ourselves. I guess, which is why I guess we both prefer the idea of my league to my GM as well.
You got to let the player fill in the gaps in some places because everyone wants a different experience. And when you do have like that core story, it doesn't really allow for that. So I don't know. As much as I did kind of enjoy the story elements of 2K17, I would like to see even less. Like, you know, the whole adage, less is more, as far as like the story is concerned.
No, I agree. I don't think it's going to happen is the only problem.
Although,
I mean, if it means more fantastic voice acting from Eric Gordon, I mean, that's...
Hey, man. Dion Waiters. Give him that Oscar.
Those cutscenes are incredible.
I loved just the way he worded that. He's like, sounds like a smart man in this league. And it's like, what? Well, you're supposed to say, that sounds like a smart man in this league. You're supposed to blah, blah, blah. And... just have to wonder like how many takes they had. To me, it sounds like they only had one, but yeah,
it really does. And you know, we've joked about it before, and a lot of people have joked about it, and Cracked even wrote an article about it. There's even an article Cracked, so that's the crossover. You know, how widespread the whole reporting on it has gone, but you know, we were talking about it and likening it to many Simpsons moments, you know, the whole. We did 20 takes, and that was the best one. And I'm thinking of Homer as Krusty, you know, reading to audience. I now proclaim this burger for sale.
I love Skinner. Al Jefferson's one as well. Like his little, he had like a little deep and meaningful with my player, and he was like, "It's not about the money or the fans or anything like that." And the way he says it, it's just It's one of those so bad it's good moments in the game. And, you know, as much as I bag these moments out, I kind of miss them as well. Like, they're like little Easter eggs in the game. Like,
they have a charm.
They're fun to come across.
It's a certain charm. I mean, so bad it's good is a thing in all media.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's... And I still love Eric Gordon. It's one of my favorites because it, again, reminds me of Skinner's, oh, yes, Capital City's Nakedest Ladies. Nod suggestively.
That was sweet to see.
I mean, you can say anything you like about our podcasting acumen, but I like to think we sound a little bit more natural than that when we do.
I'm at least better than Dion Waiters. I will say that much.
I think there was one guy on YouTube. I forget which YouTuber it was, but was doing the story, and then DeMarcus Cousins had one, and he's just on the contrary. What the hell is he saying?
Oh, yeah, that was so good. He's like, this guy's my mentor.
Yeah, no wonder my career's going the way it is. It's just,
oh, dear.
But, yeah, no, it is amusing, and it's fun in its own way, and I guess you'd kind of miss that stuff if it's gone, but I like the story, but I would like to tell it myself, absolutely, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have some generic cutscenes that are kind of based on if you do this or make a certain decision, they trigger. But because it is kind of flavor content in the background, but
Well, there are elements of that in 2K17, and they're not giving much away. But there is like one moment in the middle towards. Either in the middle or towards the end of the season, where you have to make a decision that impacts your season. So,
we've already talked about that, Ben and I, in a previous.
Oh, we have. So, okay, yeah, the I wasn't is, sure.
Oh no, we've spoiled that for everyone. That's
all right.
At this point in the year, I think we can probably do it. But yeah, it's and I, as I said in that show, I wasn't a fan of that because again, it's imposing this scenario, and it wouldn't have been so bad if I had an injury leading up to it. You know, if I'd suffered an injury in a game and it triggered, fair enough. You know, that's an interesting twist in the story. The fact that it also stuffed up the All-Star weekend for me and I didn't get to play in the All-Star game, that's got a big part of it as well, because it really triggered it in an opportune time for me. But
it did feel really contrived. And I think something that really should only trigger if you're either training too much or not training enough.
Agreed.
Because it's a conditioning issue, not a story one.
Yeah. As you say, it's contrived. It's putting it in there. And, you know, I see why they do, and it was kind of an interesting wrinkle for me to have to play injured because I chose to play through it.
I did too.
And, yeah, I see what they're going for. I see the merit in it, but I ultimately don't like it. I'd rather the gameplay drive the story than the story drive the gameplay, basically.
And I would like to be able to sustain a genuine injury as well in my career. Yeah. It sounds weird, but it would be good. Like, if you were being like reckless, like say if you were a Derrick Rose kind of a player that just drove to the rim like with reckless abandon, you probably should get injured once or twice. Like, it's not, if you play reckless, then you should deal with the consequences of that.
Or as you said, if you're training too much or you know, not taking care of yourself that way, that kind of management stuff. The other stuff, like the dating, everything, you know, it doesn't bother me as such. The dating probably bothered me more in GTA 4, you know, this friendship and dating in GTA 4. Right. You know, anything that sort of really impacts the gameplay.
Well, Grand Theft Auto is a little problematic anyway, as far as, like, female characters are concerned, but
that's the whole of the podcast right there, absolutely. but, you know, things like having to maintain the relationships or empire building, which a couple of Grand Theft Auto games have done as well, turf wars in San Andreas, for example, mandatory side quests, side missions for lack of a better term, that they bother me a bit more than cutscenes, which I can just skip or it doesn't bother me. But again, it's not really essential to the basketball gaming experience, so I can do without that kind of stuff. I'd even like to, like, I miss being able to play an Australian, you know, in the role playing. Obviously, you know, you're not going to have the Australian voice. Like, you go back to 2K13, you had the post-game press conferences. There's not going to be the Australian accent. Don't care. Doesn't need to be that level of detail. But just, even just saying that I'm from Australia, or hey, North Carolina, which you can't do because North Carolina is not one of the approved schools for the college story, part of the story. So you got to, you know, you're limited to those 10 colleges. So.
Or even Cal State San Bernardino, which is a college I actually went to.
Yeah.
that would have been fun.
Anything else but those 10 colleges. And I guess you're going to give up the college part of the story. But having played the college part of the story the last couple of years, it kind of takes a long time then to get to the NBA. Like, I started my career recently just to get some new information for the wiki and just to see a couple of different things, what would happen, and also whether the new rosters would be updated, which they are. If you start my career today, they use current rosters, which is good. But I was reminded of sort of, it takes a while to actually get to the NBA. So if you want to quickly jump into an NBA career, and you got to go through all the preliminary story again, you know, and that is the problem of the story mode, as we've said before. The replay value, because there's no branching, and it takes a while to get to the NBA, it doesn't really encourage multiple playthroughs, which I think is they're missing out on the RPG aspect.
I just thought of something. I wonder whether anybody ever plays high school or college on Hall of Fame mode. Like, that would be an interesting thing to try out, just to see whether you could slide down in the draft. Because if you're playing those early stages on Hall of Fame at a 55 rating, that's going to be so hard.
I gonna have to try. I might have to try that this weekend. I might have to give that a go because that would be. I managed to at 55 overall. I actually managed to raise my stock because I played the game a bit, so I'm a bit better than I was when we played the Prelude. But
yeah,
to put it up to Hall of Fame or to intentionally play bad and just see how far low you could get. That'd be an interesting experiment. Yeah, absolutely.
Fancy passes every trip down.
As a center. as a glass cleaning center. Fancy pass. And out of bounds it goes.
Don't forget those crossover moves.
Yeah, the elite crossover package for the 7-footer, yeah.
Although, with what I've seen online, that might work. So, yeah, maybe not.
Maybe not at 55 overall, though. might struggle a little bit. So I guess at the end of the day, even though we're sort of over online, there's still replay value for the next 6 months of 2K17. I think there's going to be stuff that keeps us occupied. Do you think you could see yourself returning to online at some point, or do you reckon you're completely done?
No, I don't know. I think I'm pretty much done with it at the time being. But you know, I can change my mind. I'm not going to hold myself to that.
Doesn't cost much to. Doesn't cost anything to change your mind. Oh, you went back on your word in the podcast, Kenny. Yeah, and I'm having fun with the game. Shut up.
if that's the worst thing you've heard me do on the podcast, then you know you're kind of new to it.
I mean,
yeah.
No, I mean I'm at that point where very very close. Might give it one more go this week because X said he'd like to give it a shot. So I'd be open to it, but. Yeah, it might just be my career, my team, and finally getting to that my league for me the rest of the way. And yeah, I think I'll have to try that start today while I still can, because the season's very rapidly drawing to a close.
And
I guess as we wrap up the show with a couple of NBA notes, I think most teams are about 14 games away, so we're like 2 or 3 weeks away from the end of the season. And geez, the year's gone quick.
It really has. And yeah, it's been a really interesting season so far. So I've enjoyed reading about it. I haven't really watched a whole lot of games, but there have definitely been a lot of interesting stories and, you know, just interesting scenarios and games and stuff like that. So yeah, I've really enjoyed this season.
Well, you know, Westbrook, 35th triple-double of the season today. First player to ever get a triple-double and not miss a single shot or free throw. And that's kind of insane.
Yeah. I mean, there's this amazing four-way MVP race going on at the moment. And I will still go out and say that I think Westbrook will win it, but give it to any other three, and I don't think I would be too angry about it.
I agree. I do think Westbrook's going to get it simply for the historical significance of achieving the triple-double over the course of the season. Absolutely incredible. We were looking at the standings earlier. We mentioned a couple of them over the course. You know, the Celtics catching up on the Cavs. I think they're just, let's see, just a game behind now. And I guess Golden State will not win 70 games now. That's official after they've they lost three in a row for the first time since they lost three in a row in the finals. No, don't let this distract you from the fact that happened. Spurs still, you know, right in there. Spurs Celtics, it could still happen in the finals, just throwing it out there. But the one thing that's, the most controversial at the moment is the idea of rest, because it's been happening in nationally televised games. A lot of people unhappy about it. Certainly arguments for and against. Karl Malone came out very vocal, as you might expect some of the old school players to do, and basically said it's not work, it's playing, get your ass out there and play. So where do you stand on the whole rest issue as it stands?
You know, I can kind of see Karl Malone's point, but at the same time, I think I am for rest if it will, say, give somebody like LeBron James an extra 2 or 3 seasons in the league. Like, I'm sure if you ask a Lakers fan whether, you know, if they could have Kobe for an extra season or two, like, he already played, 19, 20 seasons or something? He played enough, but if he could have like an extra, season or two, if it meant that, you know, he had to rest a few games here or there, because, you know, he was very injured towards the end of his career, I'm sure that'd be like, fine. Like, I would love to see an extra 1 or 2 seasons of Kobe. And that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, I don't see it from, like, the point of view where, like, we'll bring up that Karl Malone, I think, only missed, like, maximum of 2 games every season he played, with the exception of the last one, right? That was, like, the most he missed?
I'll double-check that, but... And most of them were due to suspension, actually. So let me just take a quick look at... Just one game in his first year, 1-2-1-1-1-1. Yeah, sort of never missed more than 2 games up until his final season, which he played with the Lakers, when he missed 40 games after injuring his knee. So at age 40. So he went a long time before he actually... he was pretty injury-free and playing 40 minutes a game in 91 and again in 94. Sort of like a lot of players of his era, playing 38 to 40 minutes in his prime.
So for Yahoo to dismiss him as a zero-time NBA champion is just absolutely stupid, because he has proven throughout his career that he is an ultra-durable player. He's like an Iron Man of the league. So he does have... I guess he can speak to that. Like, he's not like somebody who has no experience as far as like playing through a season. Like, he played through most of his seasons. He's one of the all-time greats. But for me, I just look at cases like Grant Hill, Tracy McGrady, and think of what could have been if they maybe rested a few more games. Because I know Tracy McGrady has this like anti-rest argument as well, and I just think, man, if you rested a few more games in your career, we could have seen you in your prime like for longer, and that would have made the NBA a better game, because he was amazing. Grant Hill was amazing in his prime as well. I would have loved to have seen him more.
If I was to draw a distinction there, the rest there would be actually sitting out when they actually did have injuries. I mean, Grant Hill trying to play through that broken foot in 2000. In hindsight, obviously, a big mistake. You know, hats off to him for that grit and grind and heart, but should have said, you know, should have done like Dunk that same year, 2000. Duncan missed those playoffs. That's why the Spurs, well, obviously the Lakers came into their own that year as well, but the Spurs couldn't even get out of the first round to defend their title that year because Duncan sat out the playoffs, and which was due to injury. And I guess that's something that I guess they should have done. But, I mean, I'm not a fan of Karl Malone. I think he's done and said some pretty stupid and sometimes, in some cases, reprehensible things. We don't need to get into that. But like you said, that or he not being a champion doesn't change the weight, doesn't lend or take away weight from his argument. And I found that rather eye-rolling. And it's funny, I mean... Kelly Dwyer, who wrote the article, I thought missed, you know, I do like his, you know, I don't disagree with everything he says. I think he's a pretty good writer and everything, but at the same time, I thought he missed the point there. And he's also a zero-time champion and has 0 games in the NBA. And it's what gets me when people say, oh, Charles Barkley doesn't know what he's talking about. He never won a championship. His opinion means nothing. But, well, we never played in the NBA at all. By that logic, our opinion means less than nothing, if that's possible. So it's a really weird ad hominem and appeal to authority that I think is just such a fallacious argument, which I think we need to, you know, it's one of my pet peeves, I guess, this whole thing. But it was kind of ridiculous. I've sort of got this old school mentality. It's like me in the All-Star game, Kenny. You know, there's still part of me clinging to that idea, and hey, you know, 6-time NBA champion Michael Jordan didn't miss a lot of games. 6-time champion Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played in 90% of the games over the course of his career, of his 20-year career. And Karl Malone's comments, he also mentioned, you know, if you haven't been in the league 10 years, why are you resting so often? I guess, again, it's that old-school mentality, and I do think that perhaps it needs to be handled a little bit better than these last-minute scratches for really flimsy excuses, I guess. But it, at the same time, it does highlight a problem with the scheduling. You know, fewer back-to-backs, spread out the season a little bit more, don't have teams play the night before they're going to be on national TV, so that there's no less incentive to rest.
Yeah. You
know, it's, while I do agree with Carmelo's point and others, you know, that old-school mentality, you know, we do. We also do know a little bit more, and we can look back, as you said, at players who should have rested a bit more. And the league, I think, can take some steps to reduce the grind of an 82-game season. Absolutely.
I see, the thing is, for me, I think the problem is the scheduling. I'm not sold on the idea that players just need to harden up and play every single game. Like, I think it's more that the scheduling is bad rather than the players are weak or whatever, you know, terminology people want to use or whatever. But just going back to the whole Grant Hill thing and not playing, like, because he's injured and whatnot, I think the argument for rest is that if you rest somebody while they're healthy, they're more likely to sustain those type of injuries later in the season. So, like, I think that would be the argument for, say, resting somebody just, like, in case they do get a devastating injury like Grant Hill did, and they could work on maybe, I don't know, use the rest to work on conditioning and whatnot. And
I mean, that was a freak injury, though. I mean, it's hard. I think he came down on someone's foot when he broke his foot.
Oh, so, yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, that stuff happens.
It's hard to... Well, I mean, the other thing is people are saying that the league is faster and more athletic now. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, we were saying that 10 years ago as well. And
I'd say it's a little faster because of the lack of hand checking. But, yeah, I don't think more athletic, no.
I don't think players are at any greater risk of injury these days, especially if they've got better treatment as well and better sports medicine. I don't think the risk of injury has increased. The scheduling could have gotten worse, absolutely. You know,
yeah.
They've been. Everyone's got chartered private planes, chartered flights now, but at the same time, you know, it's still a grind, a lot of travel, a lot of physical exertion. And someone like LeBron has obviously, with his six straight trips to the finals, has played very long years of basketball.
Yeah.
So, but then again, by Karl Malone's words, you know, LeBron has been in the league for over 10 years, so he's... I think he was sort of more looking at a Kyrie Irving and resting all the players on the same night. Then again, it's a risk the Cavs are taking because they have dropped a few games where they've rested players and now the Celtics are kind of catching up. So
yeah.
It's
a risk-reward kind of a tactic, I guess. I'm just trying to think of what point is... Oh, yeah, like, as far as skipping nationally televised games, it's like, yeah, it's bad from a marketing standpoint, but... At the same time, Indiana only see the Golden State Warriors twice a season and once in Indiana. Like, would the league get the Warriors in trouble if they rested against Indiana or against, say, the Sixers? Like, it's kind of like treating the fans as if they're more important just because they're a part of one team. Mm. It's kind of, you're setting up a dangerous precedent there. So that's one thing I don't agree with as far as, like, warning teams about resting their players against, you know, in these national league televised fixtures, because you're essentially saying, look, these games are more important for our league, whereas every NBA fan is important for the league. So
absolutely. Well, one thing that Byron Scott, who incidentally played 95% of the games in his career, I guess we all think of, you know, the Karl Malones and AC Greens as Ironmen, and they were, but... There were actually a couple of other players who kind of never hardly ever missed a game. But anyway, he suggested that the practice should be encouraged practice to rest players for home games where most fans get to see them. You know, a majority of the people in the stands are seeing, you know, have more of a chance to see them 41 times a year at least.
Hmm.
Which I guess is that's perhaps more reasonable. I think it's the late scratches and the flimsy excuses that I guess bother me the most. The other thing the league should do is take better care of the fans as far as the ticket packages, because as Jeff Van Gundy noted, you know, sometimes you have to spend more money and buy a package to get tickets to a marquee game, and then you play that's on national TV, and you go to that marquee game and players are resting again because of the scheduling. You know, it's all come together.
If the players do decide to rest, like at the last minute. The league could give them the fans concessions, like give them, I don't know whether a free pizza would do it, but, you know, something along those lines, like some kind of incentive to go along to the game anyway and not scalp the tickets. Yeah.
A rain check, like, I don't know, if you...
Or like a credit for another game or something.
Yeah. Like, again, if you could trade your tickets to a later game, that they're more, I mean, you could do that and they could miss the next game. But
well, I was thinking about like knocking off the price for that tickets and giving them like a store credit for like the ticket seller that they got the ticket from for a later game or something like that.
That could work. That could work.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think this practice is going to go away. I think the league should address it. I think they need to address it where there's the really late scratches for like, oh, my back really sore, but I'll be fine tomorrow. Like, really? Because back in the day, I don't know if you remember, but when players got put on the inactive list, they had to miss 5 games. They had to be inactive for 5 games. So I guess the idea was that, well, if you're unhealthy to play, you need at least a couple of games to, to recover, right? So I think that's what that was kind of preventing back in the day of players resting. Of course, coaches aren't obligated to play everyone on the roster every single game, so
yeah,
you're always going to have that late scratch. But yeah, looking at the schedule and changing that and doing something that takes better care of the fans who are putting out their hard-earned money for the tickets and getting disappointed. Because as Jeff Van Gundy said, there's a difference between being disappointed that a player has been injured and is unable to play and feeling ripped off because a player is being rested when they are healthy,
And look, I was in that situation when I was in Los Angeles. I mean, I told you pre-podcast that I bought a ticket to see the Clippers versus the Spurs, and about 2 days prior to going to the game, I was worried because it was a Spurs road trip. It was the rodeo road trip. Mm. I was like, oh, what if Popovich chooses to rest Tim Duncan and the Fab, like the, I was going to say the Fab Five, but it's Tony Parker and all those guys. And I was like,
big three, man,
yeah, big three. That's what I was looking for. But yeah, Tim Duncan's like my favorite player of all time. If I bought a ticket to a Spurs game with the intention of seeing Tim Duncan and he got rested, I was anxious about it because I knew that was going to be my only opportunity to see like Tim Duncan in person. So. Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that as a fan, so I understand the argument against resting players, definitely.
I don't want to see that flimsy excuse of, I was okay to practice and I'll be okay to play tomorrow, but today I'm just too sore. But, well, if that was the case, maybe should have been excused from practice. Practice? but hey, maybe teams need to do that and need to look at some of their veterans and say, well, you are excused from practice because or a team like the Cavs that's been to the finals a couple of straight years and have played very long seasons, we know how to play basketball. We've been practicing all year. Let's take this week off practice or have a lighter practice or whatever. Something with better player management, I think. I mean, yeah, I still do have that old school idea of, priding yourself in playing every single game. I guess between that and the All-Star game, and again, Adam Silver has said that they're trying to get the All-Star game competitive again, so... we'll see. I do actually like that Adam Silver is addressing these issues. I don't want to take away what David Stern did for the league because he did many great things, but I don't know, towards the end, doing the weird things like trying to change the ball and trying to get teams in Europe, I think sometimes he overlooks some of the bigger issues.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that Silver is being proactive about this stuff, but yeah, I don't know. I still think there's a certain amount of legitimacy to resting players, and I think it's proven to be successful, so I don't see it stopping.
Well, that's right. I suppose as long as they're not doing it too often, it's not going to be... I guess they're going to like the Hacker Shack, really. But, well... Speaking of Adam Silver, he appeared in The Simpsons last week as well, as himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was pretty... I'll see if I can send you a clip afterwards.
That the episode where Bart was like a basketball sensation?
Funnily enough, it was the week after that.
Oh, okay. All right, I didn't see that one then. Yeah.
No, but actually, Stephen Curry was in the episode previous to that, which is pretty funny because his appearance pretty much amounted to... and not appearing in this documentary, Stephen Curry, and then he voiced himself for a couple of lines. So I guess it will be a controversial issue. Hopefully they can sort it out in a way that treats the players fairly as well as fans and the game itself. But yeah, the other thing I guess we should mention, speaking of players who've taken time off, Larry Sanders back in the league. I didn't think we'd actually see it. But, I guess he took some time off because he felt he needed to address the mental health issues he had. And, we've talked a little bit about mental health here and there, and... what it's meant to us personally and people around us. And yeah, it's great to see him work through those issues and pick up his career again. He's signed with the Cavs, filling in for Bogut, obviously, after he went down for injury.
Yeah, that was a really horrible thing to see.
And of course, what was horrible for, I think I said it when Bogut went down, but when they were talking about, oh, and at Bogut's age, you know, you don't recover so well, I'm thinking, I'm only a month older than Bogut. I'm the same age.
Yeah.
I don't want to be hearing about how 32-year-olds are breaking down.
Physically. Yeah, that's not stuff you want to hear when you're in your 30s.
No, it's getting there, you know, and maybe some of our older listeners are like, kids. But yeah, it's sort of getting to that age where you start to hear about that and like, nope. So when they say LeBron's getting older, no, LeBron is a young man with many years left because, again, I'm a couple of months older than him. So and a lot less, my bank account's a lot smaller than his as well. But nevertheless, yeah, so I guess good luck to Sanders, but he's been in the D League. He's only played the one game for the Cavs so far. So I guess it, you know, as you put it before we started recording, I guess more of an insurance policy.
Yeah, but I think he's a really good insurance policy. Like when he left the game, he was putting up some really decent numbers and is one of the best defensive big men in the league. So I'm hoping he can return to that because I really commend him for leaving the game and sorting out his issues because I think it's really important. And, you know, I guess if players are having those issues, then that's probably a good thing to do. Like maybe just give the game away for maybe a season. I mean, probably not a good thing to do for their bank account, but you know, there's more to life than money and basketball. So, yeah, sort out those issues.
And it came at a time when he just signed that big contract extension with the Bucks, and yeah, they bought him out, and he was just really starting to scratch the surface of what he could do. He only played 27 games, and then abruptly, retired, or certainly was taking a sabbatical, whatever he put it. And it certainly turned out to be a sabbatical rather than a permanent retirement at this point, but. Just looking at some of his numbers, I mean, they weren't sort of eye-popping, but then again, he's only playing about 20 minutes a game. Looking at per 36, you know, double-double player, averaging 2.5 blocks or so a game. So, yeah.
Yeah, one of the best shot blockers in the league, definitely, at that stage of his career.
And he is, he's 28, so I mean, he's still and healthy. It was mental health, not, he did have a couple of injury problems the year before, but
yeah,
as far as we know, you know, certainly physically healthy at the moment, so playing himself back into NBA shape and etc. So yeah, I mean, best of luck to him. I mean, I'm not a Cavs fan, and I can't say I was a Larry Sanders fan. Don't hate the guy, but never, you know, he played for the Bucks. He wasn't playing for the Bulls. So, but you know what, he's a promising young player. Still has a chance to find himself in the NBA. So hey, you know, fulfill that dream, man.
And if you can be durable as a big guy, you can have a lot of seasons in the NBA. Like, you know, as much as people rag on Kwame Brown, he had longevity. Like, he lasted than a lot longer than, say, a bust at the wing position would have in the NBA. So, you know, there's definitely a potential for him to have a few more good seasons left in him. Like, maybe even, I don't know, maybe as much as a decade left in him. You never know, like, with all the medical enhancements and whatnot. So, yeah, best of luck to him.
And just to put it into perspective, Kwame Brown played 607 games in the NBA. Bill Walton, Hall of Famer, 468.
Wow. That's eye-opening. I did not know that Kwame played more games than Bill Walton.
Now, admittedly, Bill Walton retired at 34 and missed three whole seasons, including one at ages 26, 27, and 28.
Oh yeah, Bill missed a lot. Yeah, definitely.
With all of the all the foot problems he had, and it was indeed that those foot injuries every single time that he missed a season or most thereof. But you know, he had that Sixth Man of the Year in '86 when he played 80 games for the Celtics, and then 10 the next year. So injuries obviously derailed Walton. He was a great player. You know, you look at what he did in his prime, and in college was a fantastic player. But yeah. Put into perspective, Kwame Brown, the supposed bust and terrible number one pick and everything, more games than a Hall of Famer. Just if I take a quick look while I'm here on.
So what we're saying is Kwame Brown for the Hall of Fame whenever he's ready to be inducted.
And Michael Oliver Candy, 500 games. So Michael Oliver Candy, again, number one bust of a number one pick, retired out of the league by 31, as Brown was out by the age of 30. More games than Bill Walton. So, as you, to your point, if you can stay healthy as a big man, you know, you don't necessarily have to be an all-time great. As long as you can be healthy and contributing, you can have that long and productive career.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, that point, those stats prove it.
Absolutely. So that brings us to the end of episode number 198 of the NLSC podcast. Good to be back in the booth, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll try not to miss too many weeks. We have missed a couple this year so far, through to one thing or the other, trying to miss too many in a row like we did a couple of years ago. As I said, not feeling up to doing a show last week, but we will keep doing it as often as possible, hopefully every single week, unless something gets in the way. And of course, all our other content will be coming through. You can check that out on the site, of course. If you do like the show, we hope you enjoyed it as always. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher, or keep streaming it on the site itself. And while you're on the site, nba-live.com, be sure to check out all of our regular features, including Monday Tip-Off, the Wayback Wednesday, Friday Five, and Sunday Substitute, and everything else that we do, including the 20th anniversary of NBA Live content, starting up again soon, getting some more articles there for everyone to check out in the near future. And connect with us on social media, on Twitter at the NLSC, and on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. And again, nba-live.com for everything else. But that's going to do it for this week. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
And we'll see you next week. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.